horse. Go, horse.
Howdy, partners, and welcome to another edition of PZ85 Plays. I am your Marshall Double H, and tonight, PZ85 Plays the Horror. At Headstone Hill, our Deadlands campaign continues. Let's introduce you to the cast, beginning with the horse you just heard and the owner of PZ85 and creator. And I'm almost going to do the Cody thing because you're making me laugh. It's Shannon Young playing old reluctant Killian Legion.
I am the presence of John Horse.
He's not John Horse, but he is Dr. Emmett Durandal. That's Stephen Bright.
Yes, sir!
I was told today I looked like a stripper.
Yes, sir!
Now, wait a minute. We got to pause for a second. Like, you look like you should be one, or like you resemble a person who is one?
I look like one because I had a lot of ones, and I was trying to convince them to, like, 20s and 10s. My manager said, yeah, you'll look less like a stripper, and I said, less like?
Steven,
you mean I still look like one?
I got the same treatment when I was at GameStop, but they said I looked like a porn star, and I took that as a compliment until they told me they reminded them of Ron Jeremy now.
I was about to say, it's like, did they say who you look like?
And then
I gotta throw it to him.
And then they,
I already had the
then
idea.
They called me God's ugliest clown.
That's true. No, silliest
and who
clown.
Was it who did that? Well, he plays Thatcher Kane. His name's Kaz.
I've got whiskey.
Oh good.
Let's all drink. Let's all drink, Kaz.
Let's all get drunk.
Come on.
Oh, I do have some tequila margarita. I can join in with you.
I got old fashioned. Get it, Steven. Get it.
Get into it quick. I'm gonna make this episode very fast. And finally, playing Fern Hawthorne is one massaging her temples. Lindsay Wolfgang.
I'm Lenny. We haven't even started yet, and my head is already starting to hurt.
That's correct. Mostly because before the show, you just heard, Anyway, so last week, when we left off, our posse had entered the last house on the left. They'd entered number 8 Bridger Street, as you may recall. I called it that then. This is the former abode of one Agent George J.A. Reed, a.k.a. Lynn Buckles, which they've now rented and are going in to inspect and see what they might find. At this point in time, Killian is not with them, actually. We'll catch up with him in just a minute. But that's basically where we left off. If you're behind on our episodes, this is not too deep in, so go back and catch up at podzilla1985.com. Before we get started, any questions?
I actually found out that his name was Lynn Buckles, but you know, his code name, but everybody called him by another name.
I'm Lenny.
It was Lenny.
I'm
Lenny.
Yeah, so, that was sweet.
Okay, I can be cool now.
Okay.
All right.
I'm opting for cannabis instead.
So why not both?
We're going to pick up right where we left off, which is right at the house. As everyone is heading, you all were heading inside, right? You were basically on the front porch.
Yes.
And as I recall, Thatcher, you had popped the lock, right?
I did magic.
Well, to the kids. As far as the kids were concerned, you did magic.
I believe
on the entryway, and actually, I'll just give you a little, because it won't take you long to kind of figure out where everything is here. In fact, I can just screenshot this whole bad boy and send it on to you. So if you take a look in the text, here's the layout of the house. You'll find this in time, that basically this is sort of what it looks like. Remember, it's a little two-story house. You can see in front of the bay window, in front of the parlor there, that's the garden, the little wildflower garden that Fern, you found that unusual little seedling in, that aspen seedling. So you guys walked up the steps. You're on that little porch, kind of just, it's a little breakaway from, you know, any kind of weather or anything, any kind of rain, though it's not currently raining or anything like that. While you're up there, before you walk in, you notice kind of occupying that space with you, there's like a creaky rocking chair that is kind of coated with like the dust, the exterior dust. There's also an old like cob pipe and a few ashes that are lying on the windowsill beside it. That window looks right in on the parlor. As you walk in, that's going to be where you're heading into. You guys will also notice now that the kids are gone and it's a little quieter, there is like occasionally a little chirping of birds. You would guess sparrows, and they're nesting under a corner of the porch roof. But other than that, nothing real distinct here.
The birds.
Oh, I was scared the hell out of this place.
Okay, well, we'll take that in time. But everyone is heading inside. That's the plan here.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to turn it upside down. Like okay.
As you all head inside and walk through the front door, we're going to quick cut over to Killian. Killian, you were previously having a conversation with one Millie LaChance at her restaurant. That has since ended. You were just kind of small talking, and she's kind of gone back to business. What are you doing now?
Probably finishing up my drink, and I'm going to head back to the house, too. I did try unsuccessfully to ask her out. apparently asking a girl out right after the one she was in love with left her. Not a great idea. Doesn't matter. She called me God's ugliest cowboy, and I didn't appreciate that. yeah, I'm going to head back to the, I'm going to head back to that place as well.
Cause Walter Goggins looking motherfucker.
Walter Goggins.
Fallout.
Walton
Goggins. He's Walter.
I feel like I look like Walton Goggins and Justified.
You do, and that's why your stripper name is Walton Gaggins.
God. All right. Well, hang on. You may as well just keep talking amongst yourselves because I gotta go make a change real quick.
All right. Then what's the stripper name for Kaz's character, Shannon?
The stripper name for Kaz's character in this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Snatcher Kane.
You put him on the stock.
Snatcher Kane.
What?
God.
God. I don't like it. He sounds like a person who robs old women. Anyway.
I was gonna call him Redneck Blue Balls. That's the first movie he's in.
Jeez. So as you are, Killian, heading across town, it is now getting relatively later in the day. You notice that there are some of the miners who are trudging back down the hills and back into town. It's not quite into like supper time yet. It's like 4 or 5 o'clock. So the sun's going to be setting before too long within the next few hours. And of course, you're up in the mountains, so it'll start getting a bit chillier as well. One thing that does catch your attention as you're walking across town, you notice that there is a group of people who are parading up and down the streets. It's on quick glance, it's exclusively women. Looks like it's older women, most of whom are you would anticipate in their maybe in their 40s and above. And they are like chanting and like shouting. The closer you get, the more you can hear that their chants are about saying no to booze, and that one of them is like basically going on a pretty fiery rant about the women's temperance movement. And that they're trying to save the souls of these people. And that if you'll bring your bottles of whiskey to them, they'll gladly pour them on the ground for you and bring you back into the light of the Lord. Because you're basically heading across town, you're going a pretty good distance here. Again, remember when you started the restaurant, it's way down there on Creek Street. You're going way up to Bridger Street, so about as far as it'll go. You would encounter these people somewhere on Main Street, somewhere around here. Or if you chose to go straight ahead, they'd be around here. And they're heading, it looks like, maybe toward where you know there is a speaker stump, like a place where people can speak their piece, which would be over here behind the hotel where you were. What you do with that is up to you, but it is something that you encounter along the way.
And I can tell you one thing that happens is when he sees the women marching and preaching about the evils of alcohol and all that, of course, only he can hear it, but he hears a thick Irish accent in his head talking about nagging old women and always talking about the evils of alcohol when they're the ones that are evil by, you know, trying to tell a man what to do. So he kind of jerks his head to the side really quick, like he's trying to shake it out, and kind of whispers shut up under his breath, and he's actually going to go walk and listen to them, almost as punishment for somebody.
All right. So let's say then that if you're looking at the map, because you were leaving the restaurant there, let's say you encounter them somewhere here at the corner of 3rd and Main, and you, because you're heading up to number 30 here anyway at the top on Bridger Street. So you could basically follow them over to this area and then continue on your way if you wanted to. But yeah, you can absolutely follow them. Are you trying to do so at kind of a distance? Like, yeah, you don't want them to know that you're...
Almost like I'm trailing them. Like, I'm not trying to look suspicious, but I'm staying a little bit back so they can't tell that I'm walking with them.
Okay. I won't make you make a stealth roll or that for that or anything. There's enough people following them, or at least walking down the streets and in and against and along their general direction, that you don't stick out in that way.
I will if I can use my notice to see what the response is on the people on the streets, like to see how they are feeling about this.
You don't have to roll for that. You're following them and you're just observing them in general. So for the time being, there's nothing really specific. Unless you want to look for something specific outside of just general reactions.
Well, just see if anybody looks twitchy. You know what I mean? Bunch of women in the old West talking about telling a man what to do. He wants to make sure.
Sure, make a notice roll. We'll take a notice roll for that and we'll see what happens.
All right, I got to... All right, I pulled a Tanner. I closed down my thing. Nope, there it is. Okay. All right, here we go.
All right, here we go.
Steven, drink on this.
I'm drinking.
All right, that's a 5. Okay. Hold on.
Explode it. Keep drinking.
Hey. That's a 7. It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times.
The blurst of times.
Don't you get the bonus on that as well?
Don't tell him what to do.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if he has a notice. I think Kaz has that. Thatcher has that.
I do have a plus 2 on notice rolls. Yeah. So that I thought that only counted for the non wild. That counts for wild too.
It doesn't matter which one. Yeah. Whichever dice you take, you add the
F me with a stick. Then that's a 9. Then
that's a 9 total. Okay.
I'll remember that. Thank you, Steven.
No problem.
So the reaction, and I'm going to say that it takes you pretty much from here on the corner of 3rd and Main all the way to about here. So you're going to go across 2 blocks here before you catch anything in particular. The reaction at large is kind of split. It's definitely not 50-50. For the most part, a lot of people don't seem to pay attention to them. Right. This is the kind of thing where it's like somebody nowadays on a street corner asking you if you have 5 minutes to help save the planet. You're just not going to react to that. Right. You're just going to keep moving. And most people do. They're not actively snatching drinks out of anyone's hands. They're not that stupid. But they are proselytizing, for lack of a better term. Most people don't really react much. There are a couple of people, you see like a couple of guys, actually at least one who has a drink in his hand. He tries to like kind of rant back to him, but it's incoherent. He's kind of proving their point. Like, he's not doing them any favors. There are at least a couple of women who like notably look at their husbands, and the husbands like hurry them along at that point. Like, no, you're not getting involved in this. But there is at least one person who seems to like take particular notice of them. He's going to be standing, let's say, number 54, I think, is the one that I want here. 54. Give me just a second here to get my numbers in order. This is
where the hell is 54? Oh, I see it. Main Street.
I'll point it out to you.
Yeah, I see it.
Yep,
I see it.
Yep. Yeah. So number 54, now that you're passing it, and something notable is happening, is pretty clearly the Undertaker's shop. Not that he's like out there or anything, but I mean, you know how an Undertaker works in the Old West. They've got their everything from their pine boxes to their Aspen, you know, fancy corpse lockers out front, right? Like the plainest to the nicest stuff. It does, in fact, say Undertaker across the top there as well. But there's also, on what is a pretty basic kind of porch with these standard rails, there's a younger guy, blonde guy, hair is a little bit long. He's got a dusty cowboy hat sitting on top of it. maybe in his like early 20s. He's standing there fully duded out. No weapons on him, no visible ones anyway, but he does have a bottle in hand. And as the women walk by, he like makes a show of spitting on the ground in front of them. They don't react to that. They do, however, react when he, a second later, and you hear it before you see it, swings a bottle in the bottle he was drinking in their direction. It shatters against the other nearby porch, and the women scream, and one of them turns and starts yelling at him, and he just stays there. He's doing that thing where he's like leaned up against the post with his hands now like this, and he's got like one leg kind of crossed over the other, and he just has his hat low, kind of looking at him, almost acting like he didn't do that, but not reacting, not shouting, just staring him down, even as one of them gets up close to his face and is like yelling at him about how he's going to go to hell, all of this.
I would like to kind of walk closer to it, still stay a little bit back, but like get close enough where if this goes south, I can react fast enough.
Okay. Yeah, you can do so without any particular notice. The woman yells for a little bit longer. Again, this person doesn't really react in any particular way other than to look at her. You do notice now that you're a little closer, because the brim of that hat was casting a shadow over his face, and kind of still is, but he's got like a real shit-eating kind of smirk now on his face. And eventually the woman finally does say, you know, Lewis, if you don't shape up your act, you're going to end up just like your father. And you see him, like, kind of turn away for a second like he is going to do something. And he looks back at her and says, "Move on, old woman." And she turns on her heel and begins marching again with the women. The chanting is not as strong as it was before. They sound a little defeated, but the main woman, the one who was yelling at him, she kind of picks up the gusto and starts shouting louder than before, and they continue on their way to the speaker stump. This guy, for his part, stays where he is. Unless anybody moves to do anything, he's going to eventually turn and actually walk into the Undertaker shop.
I would walk over to him real quick, just you know, tip my hat at him, ask him what that was all about.
None of your business, outsider. Move on.
Now I'm gonna laugh and smirk at him. You can bustle around the women. I'd like to see you try to do that with me.
Real quick, how tall are you again?
6'4".
6'3"? Oh.
Okay. This porch is elevated like maybe nowadays, like probably a couple standard steps up, and he's on it. You guys are like eye to eye. He's kind of short. I wouldn't call him small, but he is short. So you talking to him this way, you guys are like closer to eye level at this point now. So sorry, you say to him what again?
Just kind of smirk at him and say, you know, seems awful tough bossing the women around, but I'd like to see you boss me around like that. And then I'm going to step up to go over his head. Not in front of him, but to the side of him, kind of like step next to him. That way we're not eye to eye anymore.
Do you bump him a little bit with your chest?
I tell him to hold my shirt.
Are you being a pushy penguin?
Kaz got that reference.
This guy, as soon as you start moving up on the steps, I mean, you see him angle to match you. Like, it's obvious he has been in a fight two or three times. You're a lawman. You know how this works. He's a punk kid, but he knows his business because he knows enough to keep himself facing forward toward you. So he turns. Now he's leaning backed up against the post, and he goes, "Is that fat?"
I smirk at him and tell him, "That's a fact. Sorry, I know you're setting me up for it. I had to take it. I don't care what happens to me. He can shoot me in the face. I got my line in. That's all that matters."
Is it about noon? We gotta hear the bell ring.
Do you have your badge displayed prominently in any way?
No, not yet. It's under my coat.
Okay. So you've got like duster over, and it's on like your vest or something like that. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But your guns are visible. Yes, at the very least, they're at your hips, even though they're under the duster.
Yeah, like, I mean, if he looks, he can see it. Yeah, he can see them.
Okay.
Smells like a lot of ammonia out here.
So he looks down and he sees him, and you catch him kind of clock the pistols, and he looks back up at you and goes, "Well, I don't think that'd be much of a fair fight with a man that goes healed, would it, Ranger?"
"I don't need to go healed to get the jump on a. He's not fat."
This is exactly how it goes. He pauses for a second and goes, "Wait, he's fat."
Line.
And then I look through the script real quick, and then I call him a I call him a dreg. On a dreg like you.
Mad Lib.
He kind of like does that thing where he pushes himself up off the post with his own back and kind of like shrugs his shoulders up a little bit. He looks up at you. He's used to looking up at people. You can see that. And he uses one finger to tilt his hat back a little bit. You can see now this guy has like boyish features. I mean, he might not actually be in his early 20s, but he looks young. But there's no hint of fear in his eyes. And he goes, "Is that a fact?"
Just stare at him. Just stare, just dead in his eyes.
He actually does laugh a little bit, just kind of a little under his breath. He, again, kind of pushes up off the post. He goes to walk around you. Again, like he's going to walk on into the Undertaker's shop, and he goes, "Oh, guess we'll find out. Be seeing you, Ranger." It's twice he's called you Ranger, but he never saw your badge.
I'm gonna smirk and tip my hat at him and tell him I'm looking forward to it. And I walk away.
Yeah. He lets the door close behind him. No further further fight or interaction. You notice now in the aftermath of that, a few people kind of like, nobody really stopped and watched that whole thing, but you could tell that there were eyes on you. Some people like slowed their walk a little bit, and now that it's over, they've like picked up the pace and sure. Kept moving.
You know.
Do me a favor, before we leave that real quick, make one more notice roll for me. Okay.
Steven, drink on this.
Drinking.
Ah, damn it. It's a 6, but it's not a 6 on an 8. I mean, it's a 6 on an 8.
That's all right.
Therefore, that's not as much fun. So I got an 8.
You still got wild.
I got an 8.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, it's pretty good.
That's not bad.
As the like, mini, it wasn't a crowd, but as people start to disperse, you again hear the name Lewis more than once. You also hear somebody go, "Oh, that kid." And that's it. Smash cut back to the house. So Those of you who are at what was formerly Lynn's house, JD Nolly's rental place, of course, when you enter from the porch, you are walking, as the map would show you there, directly into a parlor. So as soon as you walk in, a few things you would notice. It's a pretty spacious room, the biggest room, I believe, on the first floor. The dining room's pretty close, but that bay window adds a significant amount of space there. There is some very utilitarian furniture. We're talking about wood, everything, basically. Maybe a few things with like a cushion on them. There's a small, what you assume is probably like a little card table, a small fireplace, which would be over in the, I clicked on the wrong thing. That fireplace would be over in, I think it'd be over on the far, if you're looking at the map, the north wall. So if you're looking out the bay window to the right, it would be there. Additionally, yeah, that's where it is in general, the house. So yeah, there's a little card table, some basic utilitarian furniture. There's a small fireplace. Again, the bay window looks out over the wildflower garden. In a corner, there's also like a grandfather clock. It looks like it's a little bit in disrepair. Again, nobody's lived here for a little bit, and there's kind of cobwebs and dust everywhere. It is ticking very solemnly. And again, it's very quiet in here otherwise. So you just hear that constant tick, tick, tick. The main thing that dominates the room, though, the main thing to notice when you walk in would be that basically almost right in the center of the room, there is what looks like a player piano. Not quite as intense as what you would see in like a saloon or somewhere that uses it regularly, but it's like a pianola. Like you can crank it up. You can see that it has like a paper roll that's attached to it that has to be sort of cranked up again, and it would play, you know, the you would assume the classics or something. There is a paper roll in it right now.
Always one for curiosity, because it kills things like me. I want to go over to that player piano. Like it draws me in, and I engage it because I'm curious, like what the song choice is.
Okay. So you want to crank it up, or you want to just look it over?
Oh no, I want to crank it on.
Okay. So you there's the crank is very obvious. It's on the side. You reach over, you crank it up, and it takes a second. You hear that kind of like the slow start, and then it plays. And you notice, you know, the keys start going to work and doing their thing. It actually picks up right at the beginning. You must have been right at the beginning of the paper roll. It picks up playing Camp Town Races. Da, da, dun, 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 dun. It's a little out of tune. It's not great, so probably it hasn't been used in a while, but it plays well. I mean, it plays at standard speed. Depending on how much you bother to crank it, it only plays, you know, that go around that song maybe like one time through before it starts to slow down again and slow to a crawl.
Is there any boxes, anything that would be something that somebody would be packing or had packed or never unpacked?
No. Again, the place is very utilitarian. It's very bare, but it doesn't look like it has been packed or unpacked recently. The closest thing you could determine to that would be that, again, it's pretty sparse, so maybe somebody packed up. But if they did, they left it. They didn't leave it clean. Again, the place needs to be cleaned up, but they did not leave it in like disarray. Stuff's not all over the place. It looks like something that's in the early the early stages of being staged, like to be sold or something.
Is he like checking around the fireplace? Has that been used much? Is that cleaned out over there? Or is there anything like left behind, like used or burned?
Make a notice roll. Now we're getting a little more in depth than just what you can see.
A notice roll?
By the way, is everyone in the parlor? You guys all hanging out in the same place?
Probably.
In the doorway if there's not much of anything there, probably just kind of hanging for a second.
Okay.
Does my investigator, like, it just says certain types of notice rows? Did we ever define what those certain types were?
I think this is acceptable. I think we've just been playing it by ear, and I think this is you are quite literally investigating the area, so I think this would count for that.
All right, let me drop this on you. Coming at you. Notice and whatnot. Mm-hmm. 7.
Okay. Or.
Oh, I forgot. Type this in. The boom.
Oh, roll that one again.
Exploding.
Oh, it's Shannon.
So, a 9. A 9 would be your best possible take.
It's Shannon, exactly.
The fireplace doesn't look like it has been. Like, as best you can tell, it doesn't look like it's been used recently. It has been used sometime in the past. It's certainly not brand new.
Right. There's nothing unusual, no scratch marks, no paper behind, nothing.
No, nothing particularly unusual. The main thing you notice about it is that it does run up to the second floor. So you can see that there is, there's a continuation of it further upstairs. And you would assume then that there's probably a fireplace and what is, you would have to guess, the master bedroom upstairs as well.
So I'm not really seeing anything obvious yet here. Seems like the others are doing their thing, and I'll let them jump to it. So I kind of get my satisfaction. Everything, like you said, looks utilitarian. Doesn't look like there's any drawers or any boxes to lift open or look around. So I'm going to actually start to proceed toward the upper room.
You said you've been in the doorway. Do you mean the doorway between the parlor and that sort of hallway where the stairs are?
Forgive me, I'm looking for the Okay, yeah, so...
Yeah, I would have been standing in the doorway to the hall, because if he's not finding anything, I'm going to head over to the dining room area and nose around there.
So, while you were standing there and Thatcher was looking around, make a notice roll.
Okay.
I'm not retconning anything. I'm trying to get all these things in at once before we start moving people around here.
Guys, I'm going to try to do my best, but it's a...
Round one.
It's a fucking radioactive dinosaur. So I don't know what you want me to do.
Well, I'm going to have it is 7, because we're going to take that 5 and add my +2.
Okay. At some point in time, while Thatcher is looking around, I would say probably when he moves over to the fireplace and it's at a distance, you would swear to your right and sort of behind you that you hear like a creaking noise. Maybe like the faint opening of a door. Like, yeah, it might be from the stairs, like somewhere upstairs. You look over and see that Dr. Durandal is to your left. There's no way that sound could have come from anywhere near him. But it's not persistent either. You hear it, then you don't hear it. You kind of strain to listen for it. And now that you're actively listening for it, it sounds like everything could have been it, right? Thatcher's moving around. The wind is blowing outside. Could have been anything. Could have been anything. But you definitely do take notice of it.
Okay.
All right. So now, Thatcher, you said you want to head upstairs?
Heading up.
All right. What are the other two of you doing?
I'm going to go into the dining room and nose around in there.
All right. Doctor?
I figured the study. I would check that one out if there is anything interesting there.
Certainly. All right. Let's take those one by one then. Make sure I don't leave anything out here. So, Fern, walking on through, as Thatcher heads up the stairs, you turn around and head into the dining room. Again, fairly large space here, if not the largest and the second largest compared to the parlor on the first floor here. It's pretty plain for the most part. There's a round wooden table, basically, again, in the center of the room. 4 very standard, very plain wooden chairs. There's also... like a sideboard for like plates and utensils that would probably be set up. I want to make sure I'm looking at it as you guys are looking at it. No, I'm not clicking on it here. It'd probably be set up against the wall again that it shares with the study there, set up over there somewhere to kind of be out of the way. Maybe the most interesting thing in here is that on the far wall, like if you're walking into the dining room there on the far wall, right beside where it says ground floor on the map, on that wall, right beside where you head into the kitchen, there is a painted portrait. And that portrait looks like this. Give me just a second here. A painted portrait that hangs there, and it looks like this man here. So make a common knowledge roll, if you would.
I can do that.
Okay.
That's something you can do.
That's correct.
That's right.
Just a second here. let's see here. Comment.
Shannon, what did I tell you about
same as what
making those rolls?
Do it.
Try one. Oh, that's yep, right. Up. That one explodes.
Mm-hmm.
That one explodes. 7?
Yes.
Everyone's doing the 6 first one. Try. Come on.
And 4 for the other, so we're going to stick with the 7.
Okay. It takes you next to nothing to recognize this man. This is a man by the name of Jim Bridger. Jim Bridger was a mountain man, he was a trapper, he was an army scout, he was a wilderness guide, and since you got a pretty good role there, I'm just going to send you his wiki link, and you can read all about it. There he is. Maybe the most interesting thing about this picture, though, is not just that you catch notice of this guy. That portrait could have been there for who knows how long. It's not necessarily, you don't get the idea that this maybe particularly belonged to Agent Reege, or Buckles, or whatever you want to call him. In fact, it seems to you unlikely that he would have decorated the place like that, even though, of course, he was trying to maintain appearances. Nolly probably put this portrait up here, or maybe a previous owner or something. It seems like it's been there for a while. But as you walk around the room and you're looking around things, you can't help but keep snapping your attention back to it. Because sure enough, like every creepy painting ever, what does it do? It looks like it's following you around the room. And okay. It's honestly a little unnerving. Like, because already you've heard something you weren't sure if you actually heard, and something weird happened outside. This one is one of those where, like, you would swear that a couple of different times when you look back at it, that it doesn't just seem to be following you, that it, like, looks away when you look at it. Like, you could almost swear you see the eyes move just a little bit so that it doesn't look like it's moving or looking at you.
It's like a scene.
I'd be paranoid enough to go over and lift the painting up and see if there's anything behind it on the back of the frame.
Okay. Yeah, you can do that. There's not. It's a light frame. It's a dark wooden frame. It's not pretend. Dark wooden frame, I heard
dark
you.
Dark wooden
did.
Frame.
There is nothing particularly interesting behind it, other than there is a signature on the canvas. But the name that is on there says Hotop, apostrophe 78. So, doesn't look like, at the very least, it was painted by Mr. Buckles, unless he was using another pseudonym at that point in time.
Okay. I'm going to put it back where it was. And if there's any drawers over in the thing where the silverware and plates and stuff are, I'm going to kind of ruffle through the drawers and see if there's anything stashed in there other than cutlery and such.
Sure. While you do that, remind me, I'll come back to you for that in a minute. We're going to cut over to Dr. Durandal, who was in the study. Doctor, this place is kind of basically under the stairs in a way. It's one of the smaller rooms here, again, right up against the dining room. And you get the idea that it's basically under the staircase on that first floor. When you walk in, there's not a whole lot of space here, but there is a bit more stuff than it seems like in the other rooms. First of all, there's a green and blue upholstered chair, the first upholstered chair you've seen here. It's threadbare. It looks like it's been used quite a bit, but it does look comfy. There's a small table that has a little bit of an oil lamp on it. It doesn't look like there's actually any oil in it right now, but that's obviously what the object is. There is also like a small bookcase that is against the wall. I would say that's probably going to be, I'll have to scroll up a little bit here. That would probably be against sort of the far wall when you walk in the room, like far on your right there, right up against the wall that it shares with the pantry.
Are those white dashes on the lines? Are those windows?
They are windows, yes.
Okay.
There are windows that lead out there, so you can see outside from where you are there. There are some books on the bookcase from where you are when you first enter. You can't quite tell what they are, just that there are definitely some books. Probably leather-bound. It looks like they're old hardback books.
Cool.
Other than that, there's not a lot to see from the outset. You would have to actually, you know, go into the room.
Go into it. Okay. I guess let's see what kind of reading material he has on that bookshelf. See if there's any that aren't as dusty as the others, I guess. Just to see if there's one that has been frequently used or recently used.
Sure. Or pulled out. Notice roll.
Yeah. Let's see. I think I just... Yeah, D8.
Make
that's
a notice
a
roll.
Exploded.
Heading to the lot.
That's a 9.
Okay. Do me a favor and roll another D6. Just roll a D6 and tell me what you get.
5.
Okay. If you spend about 5 minutes or so going through the books, you notice a couple of different things. Number one, most of this reading is schlock. It is dime store novels dressed up as like nice hardbound books. And this was not an uncommon thing at that time. People who wanted to, much like today, people who wanted to look intellectual had really nice looking books that, come to find out, were mostly junk. So as you're reading through, it's a lot of, like, again, a lot of dime store novel type writing about heroes and damsels in distress and that kind of thing. None of them look particularly more disturbed than any of the others. However, by about the fifth one, you notice when you pick it up, it actually kind of slips out of your hands a little bit because it's a bit dusty. And so you catch it kind of awkwardly, like by each end, and a sheaf of paper flutters out from the back of it and lands on the floor in front of you. Before you even pick it up, if you choose to do so, you can see that it is almost as stereotypical as it can get. It looks like a treasure map. There is there's like a grid drawn onto a sheet of paper, and there are sort of little drawings of like trees and rocks, and sure enough, somewhere in the like northeastern kind of quadrant of it, there is what looks like a red X that's been marked on the paper.
Okay. Yeah, let's pick it up. Let's take a closer look, see if I can recognize, okay, like, where this may be, like, where the map is showing.
Okay.
Like, can I see if it's maybe, like, a map of the town?
Or... Right now, it does not look decipherable. It looks very generic, and it doesn't have any writing on it, so it doesn't look like something that you can just place immediately, but you get the idea that given some time with it, maybe you could discern a bit more.
Discern. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's just pick that up and, okay. Yeah.
Before you go anywhere else, now that you're right beside that bookcase, make another notice roll for me, please.
Alrighty.
That's not... Oh, yeah, it's an 8. That's not an
explodey. That explodey. 8.
An 8. Okay. So, on top of that bookcase, where you've been kind of shuffling around the books, it's a... Mm-hmm. It is a small bookcase, but it is a little bit high up. Like, it's narrow, basically. It's about the time you move that book and kind of put it back into place that you do hear, like, a little bit of a rattling from the top of it, and sure enough, you can see up there is a like a thick glass jar, the kind that you've seen often in your line of work. This is like a scientific implement. Oh. You don't use this to like jar pickled beets or something, right? This is something that's meant for some fairly heavy duty work. It has a rubber cork in it, again, not common at this time. And you can now see that you've kind of clocked it, that cork is sealed with a fairly generous amount of wax. Like it is like hardened and dripped down the neck of it. Like you can only tell that the rubber cork is up there because the very top of it is showing.
Oh shit. Okay.
From where you are, all you can really tell is that there's like a cloudy liquid in it. And because it's been disturbed a little bit, it is kind of like shifting and flowing in there. But other than that, you can't tell anything about it without getting a hold of it.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely want to inspect that. I want to see if I can discern the substance or at least, you know, just try to get an idea of what it may be.
So you want to pick it up? Because you'll have to pick it up to get a closer look at it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you reach up, you take it off of the bookshelf, make another notice roll.
Notice. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 5. Ooh, I want to do a Benny on that.
Everyone should have one more Benny than they had last time.
Oh, well then I don't need to update that. Sweet.
Yep. Yep.
And I get an extra one for the tombstone stuff, right?
That'll come at the end of this episode.
I feel better with that 6. Let's go ahead with the 6.
You want the 6?
I'll drink to that.
There is... So you know some things, you don't know some others. One thing you're reasonably sure of, now that you have it up close and you're looking at it, also it's closer so you can, even with all that wax, you can get a little bit of a hint of a scent to it. Mm-hmm. The closest thing the Old West has in a lot of ways to a sterile scent, but it does kind of, well, I don't want to say it turns your stomach. I don't know. Maybe you work with the stuff often and it doesn't. Mm-hmm. For most people, it would. You were reasonably certain, now that you can see the kind of cloudy yellow color that's in there, that this is an embalming fluid.
Oh,
that
shit.
There is probably a specimen of some kind of tissue that was once living in there, and that this is meant to keep it preserved. You can tell that there is some kind of like gray fleshy mass, especially now that you kind of got it, you got the heft to it, that's kind of like floating around in there, but you just can't quite position it right to ever get a good look at it. Like, it's always in that kind of cloud of liquid.
Okay, gotcha. That's why.
And the jar itself is like, it's not quite cookie jar sized. It's big enough that you could carry it around, but it's going to occupy like one hand and one arm pretty much.
If okay,
you
do so I don't want to. Yeah, okay. So it's not something I just slip into my jacket to.
Yeah, like, it won't like fit in a bag or something like that. No, it's a pretty good size.
Okay. I definitely want to figure out what's in the embalming fluid and why they want to keep it preserved. I'll put it where I found it, I guess, for now, and then I'll grab it once we decide to go back to the hotel.
Sure. All right. It's about this time then, Killian, that you arrive at the house. From a distance, what you can see, basically, did you guys close the door behind you?
I didn't.
The rest of you?
No. Okay.
Then when you roll up to the house, there's nobody outside. The sun's starting to sink lower in the sky. Not low enough that it's getting dark yet, but you probably got, again, an hour and a half maybe at most before it starts to pitch downward. The door is open, not swinging wide open, but it's definitely propped up against the frame. And occasionally you can hear sounds of movement inside.
I'm going to go in.
Okay.
I'm going to knock first. I'm going to like do a thing where I kind of walk up and knock on the door politely, because with this ragtag of idiots, I don't want anyone shooting me by accident.
Definitely the two of you on the first floor would hear that knock. Are you waiting for somebody to answer, or are you just walking in?
I was waiting to show you this picture of Steven that I found from our Halloween party years ago, and he looks like a child. No. Steven, you're so handsome.
This is a bill.
Yeah, and that is a bill. Okay, anyway, yeah. If nobody answers, I'm just going to kind of push the door open and walk in. So I'm waiting.
I'll holler that we're over that in the direction where I'm at.
Yeah, Fern will.
Over here.
You would be able to tell pretty easily that they're somewhere off to the right. If you're basically at the front door, you can kind of see in and see that there's nobody in the main entryway there.
All right, then I'm going to walk in and look for someone to see what they found.
Okay. You, at the time that you would be heading in toward where the dining room is, if you're following a voice, you're going to run into Fern, who is rummaging through the drawers and the sideboard, and Dr. Durandal, who is coming back out from the study. Doctor, do you still have that map in hand, or did you put it away?
I was probably going to fold it up and put it in my jacket.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I guess... checking. Yeah, at this point, if I'm leaving the room, I want to bring the specimen jar with me.
Oh, okay. Well, and importantly, you don't have to. I thought you said you were leaving.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, leaving the house. Fair enough. Yeah, so yeah, I'm just leaving without anything in my hand then.
Okay. Then, yeah, Killian, as you come into the dining room, you would encounter the doctor coming into the room from the study and Fern going through those drawers. Fern, not only is there... not anything of interest in there. There's also not cutlery. I guess that's interesting. You might have expected there to be like forks and knives and nothing. There's spaces for them, but there's not a plate. There's not a thing in there. What that means
somebody
for Agent Reach, is anybody's guess. Somebody stole it. He took it with him when he ran away.
Landlord took it.
He ate out a lot. Like, I don't know. You know, that's anybody's guess.
Okay. That's weird. But yeah. I won't judge.
So you're now all three together in the dining room.
How did it go with Millie?
Oh, it went quite well. Much better than when you did it, obviously. And I'm going to I'm going to relay that information to them of what I found out.
Okay.
Mostly because I don't remember what I found out.
Didn't you just have a fight with someone that's really small?
I don't even bring that up.
You found
like,
out that he went missing on the 30th.
Like I don't think that thing is even worth talking about.
So okay. What I can tell you guys just utilitarianly, that's not a word, but Millie confirmed to Killian that she knew Lynn's real name and his identity. She also knew he was under a lot of stress. And she, like Dr. Kirk, though she never brings up Dr. Kirk, she didn't seem to know him in any particular way, is concerned or was concerned about Lynn's mental health. She was also, yes, able to give a specific date to his disappearance, which is April 30th, which has been approximately 2 weeks as it is currently in game. The date is Friday, May 16th.
All of that.
It's been a little over a couple of weeks since that happened.
Yeah.
On that day, she says that he told, or she told Killian that Lynn had told her they needed to get out of town together, but she never saw him again.
Now, what'd you learn? Okay. What'd you, I'm gonna look around and say, what'd you find?
So far, Jack Squat.
I found treasure.
Well, knowing who you are, I'm kind of curious about what kind of treasure that is.
I pull out my map that I found, and I unfold it, and I point at the red X, and it's like, it's here. And I show Killian.
And I'm going to look at everybody else.
Killian, this map looks like something out of a storybook.
Like a kid drew with crayons?
It looks like... It's no. It looks legitimate in that sense, but it looks like it could have, you know, if you buy a book today and it's a fiction book and it's about pirates, like somebody like the story's about pirates, there might be a map in it somewhere. Mm-hmm. It looks like perhaps somebody like tore a page like that out of a book,
okay,
and then shoved it in the back of that book.
I want to look for Thatcher. Where's Thatcher? He's the only one making any goddamn sense here.
Real quick, Doctor, yeah, that's pretty good actually, Kaz. That's not bad. That's similar to what it is. It's a little more in depth than that. It looks a little more legitimate, but that's kind of what we're talking about here.
I love it.
You're telling me it didn't look like some kid drew it.
I said it looked more legitimate than that.
Was this his 5-year-old's doing? I need to go find him.
Like, that second one's pretty good. That second one's not bad at all. Good. It's much more
like
a
Boy Scout project.
Yeah.
Okay.
You
want to notice roll? What?
Yeah. While Killian's looking that map over, I need a notice roll from you.
Okay. Ooh, 4. Ooh, exploded.
This, by the way, this is my 8. This is my face every time Emmett says he found something.
At least it's not a front-facing Homer.
is 8 good enough, Hunter? Did I win?
Yes. Yeah, you're a roll king.
Yeah.
As Killian is inspecting that map, you've just exited the study, so you kind of have your back to the study door, right?
Yeah.
For a split second, you know, sometimes when you're in like a group of people, I can't get over the reactions. When you're in a group of people and you kind of zone out and you hear like a almost like a kind of a high pitched like whine. It's a very
cinematic. You mean what I'm doing right now? I'm literally hearing a high pitched whine in my right ear.
Can I hear a high pitched
whine? Oh shit! I conjured it. So, cutting through that noise, like even if Thatcher and Fern are talking while this is going on, kind of cutting through that noise behind, stop it, behind you, I cannot deal with front-facing Homer. Behind you, Doctor, in the study, you hear like a, how do I describe this? Like a dragging noise. I wish I could produce this and you could hear this. You won't be able to hear it. So I'm in front of a wooden desk.
I'm imagining the chains on the wooden floor of a Christmas story.
Kind of, but it doesn't sound metallic. Mm. It sounds, and you've heard these sounds before, because again, as a man of science, you work with a lot of different heavy-duty materials like thick glass and like wood.
Mm.
You hear, like, it sounds like somebody is dragging like a glass jar across some wood.
Oh, I need to turn around and rush into that room right away. I need to see where this sound is coming from.
Okay, you do, and I'm assuming you're running right to the bookcase then?
Oh, yeah, I have an idea of what it may be. I think it's that jar, and
You run right to the bookcase. The jar has not moved.
In fact,
the liquid in it isn't even, like, moving at all. It looks like it has completely settled, like even from when you set it down. Killian, the doctor handed you that map and then turned and sprinted back into the study behind him. Fern, you saw this too.
I'm gonna follow him because he's gonna kill himself. It's gonna happen.
Okay.
Whenever Killian gets in the doorway, I'm going to say, I heard it move. And I'm pointing at the jar with the wax. I want him to take a look and make sure that he saw it too.
Mm-hmm.
I'll look at it and Homer Simpson smiling politely as I,
Killian, make a notice roll. If you're looking at the jar closely.
Okay.
Closely.
That's a 5, and that is a nothing, because I apparently didn't do it right. All right, hold on. Goddamn, exploded again. Steven, drink on this.
Mm. You drinking? I'm finishing the drink right now.
That's 11. It's 11.
13.
And the 11.
13. No, he's so right. 13. 13. Yep.
Oh, my God. So, again, are you picking this thing up or are you just looking at it from a distance?
I'll pick it up and look at it. He wanted me to pick it up and look at it against my better judgment.
Okay. There is so first of all, again, it's a cloudy yellow liquid. You might not recognize this as embalming fluid, but you're not stupid either. You can put two and two together and tell that it's meant to preserve something. It's some kind of a preservative, probably scientific. Yeah, through the wax, you can tell it smells kind of bad. Again, there's like a gray kind of fleshy mass that seems like it's like coiled up within it and kind of keeps rotating. You're trying to like rotate the jar just right to get a look at it. And then eventually you see what is very clearly a very, very tiny hand, a very tiny human hand. Now, it's not the entire mass that's within there. It looks like it's attached to one. When I say tiny, I'm talking about like this big, like maybe the size of the tip of your finger. You can clearly see like fingers, like individual digits. Do you have any training in healing or science?
I do.
I have a 12 in shooting.
Okay, that's not it. But Doctor, he has sort of revealed that to you.
Yeah, I'm going to show it to him. Science roll. I'm definitely going to show it to him, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, science roll. Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me do this. No!
You got bennies.
Oh, got yeah. Bennies. That is a Benny. That is a Benny.
What, you double won it?
A 3 and a 1. Well,
yeah, that won't do it.
Oh, come on. Okay.
Ship in that Benny.
And
can I assist him?
Oh, that exploded.
No. There it is. Never mind.
Oh, all right. That'll work. 11.
Okay. You take a closer look at this thing now that Killian is rotating it kind of like just right in the light and able to get some of the liquid away from it by shifting the jar just right. And you see that little hand. For a moment, it occurs to you, so this must have been a child. Like you said, this was a fetus of some kind.
Fetus, yeah.
But it can't be. Because the proportions of the rest of it, as he's able to sort of like roll it just right and reveal it, You would estimate this thing's about 18 inches tall in total, but its proportions are adult.
Oh.
It's like a tiny adult human. And you never quite get a full glimpse.
The wrong stuff.
You never quite get a full glimpse of its overall appearance. But yeah, it's some sort of preserved humanoid, not quite mummified, but you know,
it's alien.
Well, it's human, or it's human. For sure.
Human. Okay.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. Yes. Okay.
Guys,
okay.
Please stop. It's driving me insane. I cannot focus.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know it made a noise for you. My apologies.
It does it every single time you send a text or a message to the chat.
I've already apologized.
Okay. And have ceased. Yeah, definitely going to relay this information as best as I can. I know he's probably gonna be hard to believe me on this, but I tried to at least explain the proportions to the, you know, the hands versus, you know, about, you know, the 18 inches. It's a tiny human. It's a tiny human.
I am skeptical on that, and I do inquire about what do you mean by tiny human? Do you mean like a child?
No, the proportions. It's just how the hand is shaped. It's just shaped just right to be where it should be an adult.
It's like, was it Ferngully?
Ferngully.
So I'm going to shake the jar a little bit. Thing. So you're telling me this is a full-grown person, but in miniature size?
Yeah. Like a mini human.
How old are you again, Emmett?
Killian, make a quick notice roll while you're jarring talking there.
Okay. Well, it ain't that.
It's a five.
Oh my god, exploded. I've been hitting those
all
lucky.
The sixes.
Yeah,
all
lucky
the
sixes explosions. Alright, that's a 10, Hunter.
That's a 12.
A 12, yeah, sorry. I keep forgetting 12.
When you shake the jar and you're having this conversation, you would swear a second after you shake it that the jar almost sort of like shakes in response on its own. Like you kind of like shake it like this and you feel like a feedback of a shake from it.
I'm going to look at Emmett and I'm almost hesitant to tell
like,
him.
Like, do I see the like shake or is it just
no.
Something that he can, okay.
Gotcha.
I'm going to look at Emmett and hold the jar up to in front of him and say, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I could have swore this jar just shook back at me. Am I like you?
Probably. And then I take the jar and I shake it just the exact same way he did.
Nothing. Swish of liquid. You can hear the thing inside move around a little bit. Like with the liquid, but nothing unusual.
And then I hand it back to him, and it's like, you may be worse than me.
Oh, I don't like that.
Little people.
All right, I want to take a Benny away from her for being offensive. If I can, please request that.
I'll take that into consideration.
So I'm going to take the jar with me. I'm going to go find everybody else, but I'm going to hold on to the jar.
Hey, I found that jar first.
I look at it, but like, I'll give it back to you when we're done. I promise. I want to see if Thatcher has any idea of what this could
be. I was going to say, while this is happening, Thatcher, you went upstairs and you were, so if you came up the stairs and came out to the basic landing there, you land in sort of an open hallway. Again, there are two chambers directly in front of you. They're listed as one and two. You would know by any like brief examination, there's a third one, what looks like probably the master bedroom further down the hall. And then there's like a little kind of hall closet and there are two closets within the rooms themselves. So where do you want to go first here? It's very plain again, bare walls, wood, etc.
Going with the master first, the main primary suite.
So the third chamber, we're going to head all the way around to there first. Yeah. Okay. Up and down the hallway, no real wall decorations or anything of interest. The door to the main bedroom is closed, but it's not locked. You can open it simply. Inside, there is, first of all, a pretty nice four-poster bed. It doesn't have any like blankets or anything like that on it right now because, of course, it's been abandoned. There is also a little bit of a, you can kind of see there, a little bit of a veranda that leads outside. That's right over that bay window on the bottom there, so you can actually step out to the outside from the master bedroom there. That door is closed. It's actually a set of double doors that open out onto that. There is indeed a fireplace that matches up with the one from below with wood. There's some basic fireplace tools like a poker and a hook stacked up beside it there. The closet that's attached to it there, the door is open. You can see from a distance. There are a few sets of like mining garb. It's very basic, like kind of a coverall type thing. There's two or three of them. They are pristine. And you know that you've seen this kind of clothing before. The Emporium sells it in town. This stuff looks like it has never, ever been used. Beyond that, there's nothing of immediate interest. Do make a notice roll for me, though.
It's that wheel. Wait, the hell?
Notice
roll. I'm getting there.
You're good.
Five.
A five total?
Yep.
Okay.
No explosion.
You walk around the room. Take a look at the things that I noticed. Maybe the most interesting is the mining garb in the closet. But other than that, nothing seems out of place or of any particular interest.
So
it's fairly plain.
Very plain. So I assume in the midst of that, I looked at the fireplace in the midst of that notice row.
Yep.
Like as far as it's on the surface. Okay.
Just like it was downstairs.
Okay. I walk over and I'm just kind of like, he's looking around the room and he stands over by it, by beside the bed where the bed's at.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like looks back at the bed and kind of like pushes on it, like a squeak, you know, squeaking at the bed or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of stares at it for a moment until he decides, oh, I'm going to lift it. And he lifts it up to see if anything's under there.
Okay, you're talking about like under the mattress, basically?
The mattress, yeah. I'm assuming, did they have box spring the mattress? Is there like...
Yeah, I don't know what all the specific details were, but you can lift up the mattress easily enough. There's nothing of interest under there. There's no papers or anything. It doesn't seem like anybody had hidden anything there. However, when you let it back down, make a notice roll for me.
Nine.
When you let it back down, you notice that on the like what little, again, there's not like sheets or a comforter or anything, but what little like fabric or upholstery or whatever we call it there is there, for just a second when you let it back down, you can see there's like an indentation in it. It looks like it, just given at a glance, it looks like the impression of a person laying flat on their back. And then all at once, starting from the top and rolling upward, it like goes away on its own. Like someone were sitting up out of bed and the indentation were going away.
Wait, that's when I put the bed back down? Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So I want to investigate this a little further. I kind of stare at it. Does it do it again?
No. Quiet. The only thing you can hear if you just stand still and kind of examine it for a minute, downstairs you hear a bit of talking, like muffled talking, because you got a couple of, you know, you got a floor between you. So you can hear people downstairs talking. You think you probably hear Killian's voice as well, so maybe he's joined you. And in the moments of silence from them, the only thing you can hear now that you're upstairs is a very faint tick, tick, tick from that grandfather clock.
I just start noticing the grandfather clock going, or did it, was it always taking?
No, I was doing that downstairs. Yeah, it's in the front room. It's in the parlor.
And there's nothing in here like drawers or anything to search, to open up or check?
No nightstand of drawers. You've seen inside the closet. There doesn't appear to be anything hidden there. Okay. Again, there's that mining garb, and that's all.
Okay. And nothing was in, like, pockets or anything in there?
Nope.
Checking the pockets and looking around at the...
Sure, you can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing to be found. These clothes look like they've never been worn. They were bought off the rack at the Emporium, and they went right into that closet and were never used.
All right, and there's three of them, so since nothing's in here, I'm going to head over back to Chamber 2. Hit the closet on the way by, but heading toward Chamber 2, just kind of backtracking to check these rooms.
Okay. In the hall closet, it is pretty well barren. It's hard to see in there because it's dark. There's no immediate light to it. It's dusty. It looks like there is a little extra firewood maybe for the main room, for the master bedroom up there. You see pretty quickly without having to take a look for it, there is like what is clearly a panel in the ceiling that looks like it's been shifted a couple of times. Like it's just kind of like laying there on the top of it. And it looks like it's been moved around a little bit.
Interesting. Now, am I hearing anything? When I see this, I kind of like freeze up, just kind of like listen very carefully. But this time kind of focused on the above as opposed to below.
Make a notice roll.
While he's doing that, I want to mention that during all this just downtime, I've been doing a couple things. And one of the things I did was I jumped on Steam to check something. And I saw that I have one of the rarest achievements apparently on Steam, which is to get to the top level with Cyclops and Marvel Heroes. And that made me very sad. Oh. That made me very, very sad.
So if I use a Benny,
mm-hmm.
it gives me +2 on my reroll of a trait.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that if I roll my 1d8 again, do I add my +2 for my investigator and then the +2 for the Elon?
Just one, because those things are... They're the same type of bonus. So you just get that one time. Yep.
Okay.
Now, all those luck-based bonuses stack, if I remember correctly. I think you have multiples of those, but the investigator and the other thing can't stack.
Got it. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. But I am going to spend one and just keep the normal plus there.
Sure.
Damn. Just sticking with the 5, I guess. Or the... Actually, I had to take the second run, right?
Yeah, once you use a Benny, the former stuff is wiped.
Cool. That's a 4.
Okay. You can move the panel easily enough. You can kind of poke your head up there. There's like an apple box to stand on. It's a crawl space. I mean, just to make it easy for you, it's crawl space. You could certainly hide up there if you wanted to, if somebody were to use it for that kind of purpose. You know that people have done that in various other places. It's not unheard of. But this one is, like many of them, cramped. It's uncomfortable if you were to spend time in there. It's kind of like fetid, like it's got like a funk to it because, again, it's an unused part of the house. From where you are, you can see there are a handful of dead mice, and you're pretty sure there might be a bat in the back there that's roosting. But other than that, it's just kind of a dirty location. Unless you make a move to move toward the back of it, that bat's not going to move or anything. And the mouse is certainly not going anywhere.
I'm going to leave him be. I'm kind of taking these as not necessarily proof, but at least alluding to the fact there's nothing been up here to stir these animals up. So
yeah, it doesn't look like there has been any time recently.
So I jump back down. And move on back to the chamber, number 2.
Okay. Chamber 2? All right. So this is a corner bedroom. These windows then overlook onto Bridger Street once you come in and the trail that kind of leaves out of town. You can see once you walk in, there are two single beds in here. Again, not made up or anything, but it looks like a space for, you know, a couple of lodgers to stay, or if you had a particularly chaste couple, if you had a couple of kids, obviously, they could stay there. There is like a little nightstand in between them. It does have a single drawer. There's also a closet, which again stands open. You can see that in it, as you enter, there are a few old nightshirts. They look kind of moth-eaten and threadbare. They've been hanging there for a while.
In the closet, anything?
The closet is just those nightshirts.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. I missed that part. Okay. So, yeah. And how many nightshirts were there? Can you remind me?
There are two.
Two. Okay. And there were three miners' outfits in the previous room, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And same here under the bed, nothing, anything protruding?
No, there is in here a nightstand that has a drawer to it.
Though, ooh, I'm hoping to open it up. Like,
okay. Right.
Give myself.
In opening that drawer, you see two things. First of all, there is an old kind of beaten Bible. Looks like it has been used and thumbed through a lot. Even without picking it up, you can see that the edges of the pages are kind of worn down from being thumbed. The cover of it, where it is normally that kind of like not quite leather bound, but maybe something like that, is worn and indented. So it's been used a lot. There is also a single 45 caliber cartridge that is rattling around in that drawer. As soon as you open it and take a look at these things, as soon as you recognize what that cartridge is, you hear the sound of a 45 going off, almost like it's right beside your ear. It comes out of nowhere. And it fires, or it sounds like it fires, right beside you. But immediately afterward, there's no one there, and there's nothing to have produced that sound.
I'm assuming this has startled me pretty well.
I would anticipate as much, but I'll leave that to you. I'll never tell you.
I'm relatively calm and collected, but
would you say that you shout? Would you make a noise?
I'd be like, whoa, you know, nothing like.
Okay.
I'm not gonna like try to scream or anything like that because I don't want to like.
But the instinct would be loud enough that other people down here might hear, or downstairs might hear it.
They probably would hear a rustling, like, you know, me kind of like stagger forward or something of that effect.
Just as you all are kind of moving out of the study with that jar, upstairs you hear only the sounds of Thatcher moving around. You don't hear this gunshot, but you do hear the sounds of Thatcher moving around, maybe a bit more excitedly than before.
So, I'm going to rush to it, obviously.
So I'm just...
Okay.
I was going to say, so I'm just kind of like looking around for that, like whatever that might have been, but okay. I don't see anything. I'm assuming the bed is not doing the weirdness it was doing earlier. So
Nothing has changed in here or moved.
Okay, I refocus in on that kind of like side table, and since that the Bible was like really well thumbed through, I look to see if there's any, if it's like creased in a way where anything looks like overly used.
Okay. Quickly, is anybody else going upstairs? Fern, Doctor?
Nah, he's got it.
Thanks.
I want to look at the jar. I've become a little obsessed with this.
Okay, yeah. You can continue looking at the jar. Thatcher, Killian, bound up the stairs. It doesn't take you long to figure out where your compatriot is. He's in the second chamber there. And when you come into the room, he would have your back to you because that nightstand is in between those two beds on the far wall. He is holding a very well-worn Bible.
And I would just exclaim, and I have my pistol drawn too, by the way, because you never know.
Which one?
The good one, if you know what I mean. and I'm gonna look around the room and see it's just him and say, like, what the hell was that about?
I'd let him know about the sound of the gunfire going off, but not seeing anything nearby. I explained to him like how it's like so, it was so close, it was kind of in the same room.
Yeah, Killian, you know for a fact that not a gun fired anywhere within a mile of here. You would have heard it, there's no question.
How sure of you?
Sure, I was not. Now, never, maybe then.
I'm gonna think back to the wiggling jar that I experienced and him hearing this phantom gunshot and tell him, I'm gonna look at the jar, look at him, and just very dark room, shadowed face, look up slowly and say, something's not right about this house.
And that is where we're going to cut it off for
tonight. I was going to set you up. I was hoping you would see it. Yes.
That's where it's going to end.
Nice.
Yep. That's where we're going to call it.
Good stuff.
Love it.
All right, guys. So that brings to a close another episode of PZ85 Plays Deadlands, the horror at Headstone Hill. But we're not done yet for this week. Shannon, tell them what we got.
Well, unfortunately, tomorrow we'll be back with an all-new episode of Extras and Epilogues featuring Space Jam.
It is
New Legacy.
It is very unfortunate. Yeah,
I haven't watched
last
it yet.
Week we covered the old Space Jam, and the original still holds up pretty well. We talked about that. Obviously, this past weekend and past week, we all got to see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, and that was phenomenal. But yeah, then Kurgis talked us into watching the new Space Jam, A New Legacy, and I have seen it, and I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I'm going to need another. One of these.
I'll spoil it a little bit. When we came in, Hunter said, "I'm not going to spoil it, but I'm drinking," and I was like, "Oh God!"
I just held this up.
God,
yeah, we just watched it this afternoon, so we'll talk about that tomorrow. We got to bring Zach
in.
Wait
for this.
Share our pain.
I seriously can't wait for this.
It. He has seen
because
it too.
There's a hierarchy of horrible movies that we've reviewed on here. It basically the bottom of the barrel. I'd say even with our disappointment in Dog Soldiers, the bottom of the barrel's got to be Neil Breen, Fateful Findings.
It's Neil Breen.
Yeah,
yes.
And then I think it's Dog Neil Soldiers strictly because of the disappointment. Then Tokyo Gore Police. I'm curious to see where this ranks. I'm so excited. So excited.
I would like to propose a couple options if I may in the far future.
Oh yeah, September's going to be good for you because it's the always. Worst of the worst. Yeah.
Well, right. That's the theme for September.
Oh, okay. Might have to hold back on that one.
Let us know, because I want to know.
We'll talk about it briefly.
Did we ever do Stir of Echoes or Don't Blink?
No. I've never seen Stir of Echoes.
I've never seen either of those.
Good.
Okay, so I want to do both, if not one, at least one of those, since y'all have never seen it. Or do y'all do it where no one's seen it?
We do both.
It just depends on what we're doing. That January was themed to let's do stuff that no one has ever seen.
But that's
February was rom-coms. March has been March Madness. Has been basketball movies. So
Stir of Echoes. That one is maybe worth. Let's do that one first.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
And then. So that's Wednesday. Thursday, we're finally getting to our AD, our top five fictional.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
More than likely.
Wait a minute.
I got a message from one Sir Farmer Lord Billy Hills who said that he said, no matter what we do, we're going to have a late night on Thursday. I haven't looked at the message yet, so I need to see what he's talking about. If it's a late showing of Godzilla, I might just turn it down and go see it at a later date. I love Godzilla, but Godzilla versus Kong is not the same as Ghostbusters to me. It's one that can wait till the weekend.
Yeah.
If it was Godzilla minus one, maybe, but Kong versus Godzilla, I know that stupid fucking monkey's going to get most of it. Yeah. So no,
I know we need to end, but did either of you see the minus one in black and white when it ran?
I did.
You did?
I haven't seen it at all yet.
I wanted to so bad.
Without me, I just didn't find out about it after you did it.
It was a whim. It was a whim thing. And I saw it with the worst person. So don't feel too bad.
I have only ever seen one Godzilla movie, and Shannon's going to be very sad to find out which one it is. The Broderick one.
That was my first one.
To get around to all of them, but it's the only one I've ever seen.
We'll talk.
So Thursday, hopefully, top five fictional alien races. That's the plan. We've been wanting to do that for a while.
Yes.
Shannon, my favorite is the Carinian.
Oh, don't spoil it. Child
and
of mine.
Then Friday, is it horse time?
I hope so. And I don't want to take horse time back to its roots because I want Kaz to be there. So me, you, and Kaz live on Facebook. That's what I want. That's what I want. The three of us live on Facebook once again.
I'll bring this back again.
And then afterwards, whether it be Friday or Saturday, I think we are going to stream again Helldivers because we've been having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
A lot of people have watched and enjoyed it. So Steven, the Star Marshal or whatever the fuck you are now, we'll be back for that.
I'm a chief. I can help.
You led soldiers.
I led last night. It went okay.
Yes, sir!
all right. So, and then we'll be back next Tuesday for the next episode of The Horrors at Headstone Hill for PZ85 Plays Deadlands. But until then, for Shannon, for Lindsay, for Steven, for Cass, for Jane, who's here as well, I'm your Marshal Double H. Night, partners. We'll see you then.